So the short version on suspensions and debarments, what they are?
Certainly. Well, first of all, both of them are exclusions from doing business with the federal government. A suspension is a temporary exclusion, usually imposed pending completion of investigation. A debarment is for a fixed term, and that fixed term generally does not exceed 3 years.
So what was the purpose of this particular investigation?
We had three purposes. The first was to gain a better understanding of the excluded parties list system, which is the electronic system maintained by the General Services Administration for parties that have been either suspended or debarred. Secondly, we wanted to understand the factors that lead some agencies to be relatively active in this area and the factors that lead some agencies to be relatively inactive. And thirdly, we wanted to take a look at the Interagency Suspension and Debarment Committee, which is a committee that is responsible for overall oversight and supervision of the suspension and debarment area.
So why are there suspensions and debarments that seem to be concentrated in just a few agencies?
We found three factors that lead to that. First of all, the agencies with relatively active programs have dedicated staff to that effort. Secondly, they have policies and procedures that supplement the federal acquisition regulation that go into far greater detail about how to make the system work. And thirdly, we found that these agencies have an active referral process. They use their inspectors general, for example, or their contracting officers to refer cases to the suspension and debarment official for further action.
But if you have dedicated staff and all this attention on the possibility of suspensions and debarments, doesn't there have to be an objective standard so that you just don't keep that staff busy for the purposes of having suspensions and debarments?
Certainly. And there are objective standards that are laid out in the Federal Acquisition Regulation, both for suspensions and debarments. These Federal Acquisition Regulation lays out a number of violations that may lead to a suspension and debarment. For example, commission of fraud, violation of statutes that pertain to the submission of offers for contracts. Those would be grounds for debarment. If the agency has suspicion and adequate evidence that these transgressions may have occurred, then they can take a suspension action pending completion of investigation.
We're speaking with Bill Woods, Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues at GAO. And what recourse do contractors have when they're hit with one of these things?
Well, first of all, there are due process procedures in place. The agencies will, before they take action, issue a notice to the contractors that they are proposing for debarment, for example, or a show cause letter that invites the contractor to come into the suspension and debarment official and explain the behavior that led the suspension and debarment official to initiate the action in the first place.
Taking a look at the agencies that don't exercise this as often, does that reflect on the agency and its diligence? Would there be more actions against contractors if they were more Johnny on the spot, or is that an unfair assessment?
That's a good question. What we found is, first of all, that these agencies with the inactive procedures, with relatively few suspensions and debarments, lack the three factors that I outlined earlier, the dedicated staff, the policies and procedures, and the referral process. However, it should be noted that the process is designed to be flexible, and the process is designed to ensure that contractors take steps to bring their activities, their internal control procedures, into compliance, so that an agency may very well engage in discussions with the contractor and ask and, in fact, direct the contractor to bring their policies and procedures into compliance and not take the suspension and debarment action.
And without getting too deep in the woods, is there evidence that those that did not issue too many debarments and suspensions, did they have a pattern of issuing cure letters in greater frequency so contractors could clean up their act before they got to that stage of suspension or debarment?
There is some indication of that. And certainly when we talked to the suspension and debarment officials at these agencies with relatively few listings, that's exactly what they told us, that they were otherwise engaged in trying to bring their contractors into compliance.
And is a cure letter required before you suspend or debar? It sounds like it's not.
No, the practices will vary from agency to agency. Some use those notices with great frequency. Others prefer to immediately suspend a contractor and then invite the contractor in to explain what they're doing to correct the deficiency.
And has the Office of Federal Procurement Policy talked with you about this report? It sounds like it's an area that impinges on things they look at, too.
We talked to the Office of Federal Procurement Policy during the conduct of our review because they have overall responsibility for this area. And they recognize that steps need to be taken. We made specific recommendations to the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, and they agreed with those recommendations.
Of course, Dan Gordon has a lot on his plate right now as it is, so now you've added something else.
He certainly does, and they have relatively few staff, but they have been very, very active recently across a number of fronts, taking very, very positive steps to improve the acquisition process.